Welcome to episode one of Store and Forward, a podcast about the past and future of ham radio. I am Kay Savitz. I am curator of the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications.
And I am Steve Stroh, NHGNJ, and I am the editor of Zero Retries newsletter, which tries to talk about technological innovation in amateur radio, the stuff you don't hear from the publishing industrial complex in amateur radio.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Kay. Been a busy week.
Yes, it has. I heard you gave a talk yesterday. I'm excited to know how that went.
It went well. The talk was titled Amateur Radio and Open Source, Not Just Linux. And I had to add that tagline because I was speaking at Linux Fest Northwest here in Bellingham, Washington at Bellingham Technical College. And Linux Fest is a beloved institution here among the techies, but just like a lot of things, it suffered badly in during COVID, and it died, and it was resurrected by a very energetic group, and they did a great job of bringing it back. It was not quite the Linux Fest of old, but it will get there.
It never is. Yeah, nothing's ever the same.
Yeah, but there was some trimming that needed to be done, and Linux Fest had gotten a little crufty and, you know, tired and set in its ways, but it was good. And my session was in the session before it, which I sat through, I can't say standing room only, because anybody who was standing who didn't have a seat in this classroom had to be ushered out because of fire regulations. So they, you know, they're very strict about that. So it was great. It was packed, very receptive. About 25% of the audience of 60 people identified themselves as hams, and the rest were just curious Linux techies. So the talk was about trying to expose them to amateur radio, the cooler stuff that I talk about in Zero Retries that would be relevant to them. And, you know, a reason to get curious and interested about amateur radio and maybe become an amateur radio operator. It was what I call a glancing blow talk. I know it sounds ridiculous. It's funny to say it, but I blew through 57 slides in, a 1 hour time slot with time to spare for questions. So I was moving. And Pete, when I said 57 slides, a lot of people said, "What?" But yeah, it seemed to work. I don't, when I give a talk like that, I don't read the slides to the audience. They're basically there for backup, and and it was recorded. It'll be on YouTube this week. They'll trickle it out. There were I think 5 concurrent sessions during the whole day plus Sunday. So it'll take them a while. Mine might be at the top of the priority list. So it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. That sounds like a fun day. Did you go to any other talks?
I attended one about Temple OS, which I had heard about. Has a very interesting history. it's got some unique features to it, and it's. One of the claims to fame about Temple OS is that it's completely network safe, and that's by dint that it does not have its own network stack. Just it's purely a on-premise. And the other thing that made sense after listening through the whole thing is he said, as far as the creator was concerned, who is deceased, he says, I intended this as a next generation operating system for a super C64. Or C128, I think. So
nice. I had never heard of Temple OS.
You'll get sucked down the rat hole and spend at least a few minutes digging into it. It's got a, like I said, it's got a really interesting history.
Nice.
And news for Zero Retries is that as a result of the signups from the Linux Fest audience, Zero Retries just tipped over the 1600 mark this weekend. So that's kind of cool.
Congratulations.
Every one of those big milestones is fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what, how goes DLARC?
DLARC, it's humming along. It's going well. Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications is the thing that I take care of at Internet Archive. And I have just spent the last several days digitizing a whole bunch of de-expedition talks. The California Historical Radio Society sent several boxes of materials of de-expedition talks. Now, these included, a bunch of them were on videotape, which were sent to my colleague Jason, and he digitized those. I got all the cassette tapes, and I just finished digitizing all those. And they also sent a bunch of slides, 35 millimeter slides, which we have not digitized yet. that's going to require a whole different setup to get that stuff digitized. Oh, and one, because nothing's ever easy, one reel-to-reel talk, reel-to-reel tape.
We can talk offline, but I can recommend someone who can do that work or is already equipped for it.
Well, okay, great. I have a player, but that I borrowed from a buddy, a reel-to-reel player, so I can digitize it. But he couldn't find his take-up reel. I have the player and I have the media, but I don't actually have a take-up reel. And I looked on Amazon, like $35. Like, dude, I just want a round piece of plastic. So I might have to buy something on eBay or something in order to do that. So yeah, these talks are super interesting. They go back from, some of them go back to the 60s. Most of them are from the 80s and 90s. And people, went to weird islands and things all over the world that, bring their gear. They talk to people, and they talk about the adventure of getting there, and the technical issues of setting up radios in remote situations. And they're interesting little talks. And even without the slides, hopefully we'll get digitized eventually. They're fascinating talks. And I have, as I put in the metadata for all these and research these people, many of these people are silent keys now. They did their adventures and, looking at QRZ.com and things, and it's just like, oh, yep, they died 10, 20 years ago sometimes. So I hope they're useful to somebody who can, enjoy these expeditions.
It dawns on me that we have this newer activity in amateur radio of summits on the air and parks on the air, which is considered, a travel incentive or travel involvement with amateur radio. But we've been doing, with occurred to me that de-expeditions or, extreme travel, involving amateur radio.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for just like going to the park, 5 miles up the hill, in your neighborhood and setting up. That's fun. And a whole lot less.
I haven't mapped out whether all the Whatcom County here, where I live here, right up against the Canadian border, have all been activated for parks on the air, and I'm sure that many summits on the air, because we have a fair number of mountains in the immediate area, sure, haven't. But the weirdest one I've ever, there's, if you Google, de-expedition, there's this one photo of a platform that is literally just a few feet above the water, on sitting on a rock, and a guy is sitting there with an umbrella, a desk, radio, and I mean, it's obviously in a calmer part of the world. just hilarious. I need to find that, put it in the, find that particular shot and put it in the show notes. I describe, you know, extreme de-expeditioning as, you know, one of the lunatic fringe, you know, activities, like kind of like moon bounce. You know, it's a challenge for those who choose to accept it.
It's a, what do they say? It's 1,000 hobbies in one, and some of them are out there.
Well, the de-expeditioning has evolved to the point there's a system called Radio in a Box. And this de-expeditioning group had gotten tired of being refused access to certain islands that they wanted to activate. And they could not. So a de-expedition isn't just the radios, it's all of the support. You have to bring your own fresh water. You have to bring, you know, toilet facilities, cooking, you know, all that stuff, you know, living. And some of these places are inhabited very much by, not inhabited very much by design. So it's hard to do it. So what they came up with, that they've actually deployed a few times, is this system where they basically land on the beach. They carry a big container onto the beach that has all of the radio gear in it, including the amps. And the whole thing is sealed, so the crabs can't get into it. And it's liquid cooled there, and they have a cooler of ice or something. They have an external air condition, some kind of cooling unit, and a generator. And then they telemeter all of the data, like it's a flex radio system basically in the box. And then they telemeter all the data back to the boat, and they stay on the boat. You know, they cook on the boat, they sleep on the boat, you know, et cetera. So there's no impact on the island per se, except this radio on a box. And they get to claim it as the island because the radio is on the island, you know. So
okay. Is that cheating? I mean, I guess not.
I think creative. If the radio is on the island, I think they're within the letter of the law.
Huh. All right.
So yeah, look up Clever. Radio in a box, and there's one. I don't know if it's on YouTube, but you know, there was at least one presentation that was done. I think it was like in one of the Khan Academy, but I don't remember the weekend series of seminars, you know, that were held, and they very proud of it's an interesting technical accomplishment. The liquid cooling was, I thought, very inspired.
Clever. That's awesome. So, very yeah. Clever.
Let's see. What else we got? Oh, so I'm mourning the impending death of MFJ, but I gather you're, one of the zero retries, interesting things about MFJ was that they were one of the very first and one of the most prolific licensees of the Tapper TNC2. Mm-hmm. When Tapper licensed the design, MFJ enthusiastically cloned it in their image, meaning a cheap case, not an extruded case, a cheap metal stamped case, not an extruded case, and made it bigger, et cetera. So kudos to MFJ for being early and prolific in the packet radio revolution.
Nice. They said they're not going to be making any more equipment, but they're going to be selling off what they have left. And so as soon as I hear that, I'm just like, okay, what do I need to do as DLARC curator to archive MFJ? And I had already done like all their manuals like more than a year ago. I just downloaded all their manuals and got them from the various companies, got them into DLARC. I did that again and to look and see what, you know, maybe they had added some. And actually they had added, I haven't uploaded them yet, maybe 20 manuals since I did it last time. So those will get added. And then I archived their YouTube page. They only had like 20 videos or something they had made, but you know, those are all up now. And I've been working on their newsletter. So yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, if and when their website disappears, I will have as much saved as possible.
I'll have to beat the bushes for the, you know, make, now that you have stuff on DLARC, I'll have to make sure that I don't have any stuff that you don't have that I can put in my next batch to DLARC.
Right.
For digitizing. So what else? So besides the D-Expedition and MFJ, what else is?
That's it. You mentioned you had mentioned Comm Academy a few minutes ago. Communications Academy was this online, mostly I think entirely online live training.
No, it was held in person for very long. The only time that they transitioned to online was during COVID.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it was a beloved event here. I am in mourning for that too. We had a blessing.
It happened for, I mean, it was more than 20 years and it was mostly focused on MCOM,
yes.
emergency communications. And the first one happened in 98 and went on for quite a while. And they had done a great job at saving most of the talks, the slides. Some of them were on video, but you know, the PowerPoints and that sort of thing. And I got the okay for them to put all of that up on DLARC. So that's all up on DLARC now. And I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing them in any way. They put on a great conference. They did it for a long time. They saved all their documents. Kudos to them. The benefit that I think that DLARC is adding is that now all their stuff, all of their documents were in Google Drives. And they were sort of just like in these silos of Google Drives. You couldn't search them. You couldn't, if you thought, oh, I saw an interesting talk a few years ago, what was it? It was difficult to find. So anyway, I downloaded all those and got them into the DLARC library, where now you can search all of them. And you can search by speaker or by topic or by year. And then for the ones that have video, they're all transcribed. And so it ended up being more than 400 items, more than 400 items. Some of what I do for DLARC, Steve, is a lot of fun. You know, it's like, here's these newsletters, and I rename the files a little bit and I upload them and whatever. Comm Academy went on, you know, it was for 20 years and they had all these files that they had in different formats in these different Google drives. It was a slog. It was just like a slog to get all the files and get them named right and make sure they're all in the right formats and do the metadata. I was just like, I mean, by the end of it, I was just like, I'm doing a good service helping people. it was terrible, but it's done now.
I had this moment, you know, we talked when I was uploading things and I was chafing a bit about the meta, you know, having to fill out all the metadata ahead of time. And you were completely unapologetic about that requirement. You know, people don't go back and fix the metadata. I said, right. You know, he's right. Yeah. We won't.
Yeah.
Let us get away with it.
My colleague Jason said it years ago, and it just stuck with me. He said, metadata is a gift to the future. It's a gift that you are making to the future, so that, sure, you know, just uploading something is not good enough if somebody can't find it. And sure, you know, so I try to do it right and always get it tagged with people's call signs and whatnot. So yeah, Communication Academy, RIP, but you know, all the talks they've done are going to be out there, you know, forever now in the library.
One of the things I think that was unique about Comm Academy was that they had the attention of all of the emergency communication organizations in Puget Sound.
Mm-hmm.
And the best part of Comm Academy was showing up at Comm Academy and all these emergency communications vehicles were there on display.
Nice.
And you could wander in and out and ask any questions. The FEMA folks were the most fun. You know, they would get uncomfortable when you would ask questions about certain items and point to something in the rack. And they said, can't really talk about that one.
Don't worry about it. It's not for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but there was one FEMA trailer that was entirely devoted to HF. They had the truck was a big truck. It had its own onboard generator, and it had facilities for hooking up to external generators. It had like 2 5 kW HF radios that were entirely remoted. And I said, how do you control these things? And he pointed over to a rack and he said, we unspool the fiber and go to the command, you know, vehicle, you know, they run it from there. And they were just, you know, the hired help. And then they would, you know, they had all kinds of external antennas that they could put up, including, you know, they could pop up towers, they could put up verticals, you know, they had all that stuff, but it was just the radio truck, you know, and all of the smarts were elsewhere, you know, over a fiber. And I thought, boy, these guys got it together.
Nice. Yeah, I noticed that when I was archiving all the stuff that the Comm Academy, it wasn't just hams talking to hams like many of the other conferences are. Like, oh, there are people here who really know what amateurs are amateurs. I mean, it's right there in the name, but there are professionals here who it's their job to know what to do when there's a tsunami or an earthquake like great information.
It was a fantastic conference, and it's a loss that we are not doing it anymore.
Yes.
Let's see. You said, you've been busy. I'm glancing at
I have been busy. We can talk about that stuff later. We have got a couple of minutes left in this episode. Can I show you the most ridiculous thing that I found
absolutely.
Added to DLog here? This I have to share my screen here, and hopefully you can hear it. This is our first episode. We'll have to see if this actually, you know, works as advertised. Someone sent in this video to digitize. This came in with the DXpedition stuff, but it's clearly not a DXpedition. So this is called Pile Up Busters. It says, with apologies to Ray Parker Jr. And sometime in the 80s, these hams put together this silly video. That's a spoof on Ghostbusters, obviously.
There's something strange in the neighborhood. Who you gonna call? Pile Up Busters. If you can't get through and you think you should, well, who you gonna call? Pile Up Busters.
It's a Commodore 64 there, so that dates this pretty well.
We ain't afraid of no pileup.
The guys are wearing the suits. They've got the little Ghostbusters type
outfits. Tower.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
You can hear things from a foreign land. Who can he call? Pile Up Busters. An invisible ham screwing up the band. Oh, who's gonna call? Pile Up Busters. Oh, we ain't trained in no pile up.
Anyway, this is just one of the, I archive so many things and talks and conferences and newsletters and stuff. And then something like this comes up on. And it just,
aren't you going to be subject to a takedown on this one?
So fingers crossed. I don't know.
You want to crack what pile up? And the first call cost you extra, buddy. You okay?
We ain't afraid of no pileup. Yeah, 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 yeah. Who you gonna call? Pileup Busters.
Anyway, that's probably enough of that. But I just wanted to share that. Made me laugh. Creative people.
Let me share one with you here.
Sure.
Let's see. Your screen. New. See the Kiwi SDR two. You see the Kiwi SDR two.
I do.
Okay, so this is a software-defined receiver, and what's really cool about this is the whole thing, and it's got a I'm blanking on the small computer.
Raspberry Pi or
Not a Raspberry Pi. It was another popular one that is a little more powerful and a little more predictable than the Pi.
The
Oh,
ESP32 six.
green something.
I don't know.
Be BeagleBone. It's
Okay.
a BeagleBoard. And it acts as a web server. So when you go out into the onto the web and you connect with one of these, it's being served off of this. There's no host computer. There are aggregator host computers elsewhere, but all they basically do is channel the you know channel your web browser to that unit, and the web that unit is doing all the work, including all the decoding, which is amazing. So
So did
you
you
can
order
sit there.
one? You have one on the
Oh
way?
yeah, I just bought got mine this week.
Excellent.
All the modern logistics is just amazing. It was the product of one guy. He outsourced it entirely. Everything came to him in New Zealand. He assembled them, he programs them, or he burns the cards, et cetera. Then he ships it from New Zealand, and I had it from order to in my hand in like 2 weeks. And he's doing these builds in custom batches. Now, for a while, it was also a casualty of COVID. The parts for the original version went unobtainium, so he had to redesign it, but now it's done, and there's going to be a lot more of these on the air now.
Oh,
So
yeah.
available, when I finally get my rig up and running, it'll be fun, and I can share it with people, and you can just listen, I love this paradigm of, amateur radio from your couch, on your tablet or your, even laptop or even your phone. I've got another build that I'm working on to do the same thing. So,
Sweet.
yeah, that'll
Nice.
be fun. And you're gonna have to drive K. I managed to lose my show notes
Okay, well,
when I
all
closed the window.
right. Well, I think it's about time to close out the episode. Keep it bright and tight. And this has been Store and Forward, a podcast about the past and future of amateur radio. You can find the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications at archive.org/details/DLARC. That's all lowercase.
And you can find Zero Retries newsletter at www.zero, Zero Retries, RETRIES.org. And keep an eye on the browser. Sometimes it likes to call it zeroretires.org. Good to talk to you, Kay.
Good to talk with you, Steve. 73 from K6KJN.
73 from NHGNJ in beautiful Bellingham, Washington.